My name is Deb. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a compulsive overeater. I am a codependent, have been a nicotine addict, an addict in general. And I have done this work as is laid out in the Big Book with the help of a Big Book Step Study sponsor and a loving God. And I am in the process of making my amends and willing to complete them. And I do the best I can to live in steps 9, 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis with the help of God. I'm glad that I'm talking about this because it's a good step. Gee, are any of them bad steps? You know, it comes down to that. But I'm grateful for this opportunity. Having gone through the process in the last year and a half, I'm reevaluating everything. And part of it has been this reevaluation of my relationship with God, my higher power. So it's a good thing to have to sort of put my, you know, sort of put your money on the line, you know, sort of speak out to declare it and sort things out. Just before I start, I actually, just the background is I was raised in a family with a church experience, Lutheran experience, so kind of the original Protestants. I think I'm still protesting just about everything I can. But one of the things I really liked about that background, which became very relevant to recovery, was the concept of grace. You know, grace is a foundation of that. I grew up as a very eager, especially in my teen years. I mean, when you're a teenager, it's all crazy anyway. But my teen years were not filled with so much substances as it was with crazy love for God and Jesus. And, you know, I even signed my yearbooks, and it was an emotional faith. And it was a wishful faith. Then I went off to college, and I went off to a very good college where people looked down their noses at being religious. And, of course, that was 1970, so, you know, no football, you know, no military, no religion, everything was out. And, you know, for a period of time, I was away from that. But I never left that spiritual part of me. In and out over the years, periods of very strong commitment, periods of not being committed. But I will say that at no time prior to coming into recovery and working through the steps a number of times did I have the kind of relationship that I think our program talks about, which is a personal, and this is talking about that personal relationship with a higher power of our understanding, whatever you want to call it. I remember when I first came in, just before I came in, and I'll talk about the barriers, but for me the barrier was I was pissed off at God, you know, because like one of the characters in this story, I was blaming God for the sorry state of my life. I've come to understand that's not the case at all. And that I shouldn't even be here. There are times when I probably should have gone off the road or done whatever in those days. But God was there to take care of me. So that is a different thing. And I remember being confused. And a word I use the word confused. That's my. I've learned that's my code word for I didn't get this in the handbook. I don't know how this works, so I do it cognitively, and I've learned that the word confused for me simply means that wasn't part of my experience, and maybe I'll look at that later. But I was very confused by the members of the recovery program I first came into who talked about God and Jesus like their best friend. And that really was very confusing to me. And again, I say that because I had been raised in a family where there was a religious experience, but it wasn't, and this is true of my emotional life, there were emotions, but there weren't personally felt emotions or communicated emotions, so it was very, very superficial. So if we look at the step, I look at this as the chapter of convincing. You know, if you didn't get it, if you weren't beaten up enough in the first step, where we said we have no power, we can't control anything, our lives are unmanageable, this is the chapter that the principle is hope. And it's supposed to give us hope for recovery, hope for a different kind of life. And when I look at this, I mean, I'm sort of thinking about it. It really is all about the arguments. And I could see a lawyer making these arguments for, you know, these are the reasons that, you know, we think it's worthwhile that you look at this. And by the way, this is the only thing that worked. And by the way, if you do it, maybe you can come along with us. So it really is laying that out. In thinking about things, I started looking at just a couple of, you know, looking at that concept or the definition of higher power. And even Merriam-Webster says, you know, it's a spirit or being, such as God, that has great power, strength, knowledge, etc., and can affect nature and the lives of people. So at a very basic level, I think probably I know my problem was I really did think that I was God in my own life. I was the agent of change in my life. I was the one who controlled things. I thought that if I made a plan and it was reasonable and I had the resources to do it, why shouldn't it succeed? And if that's not thinking that I was God, I don't know what is. You know, at a very fundamental level, I was self-reliant to the extent that I couldn't rely on God. I now understand better that the reasons I couldn't rely on God had to do with trust issues, that I couldn't risk not being loved by God. It was very plain to me at that. Interestingly, when you look at how the Big Book is written, it was written a lot with a lot of the consideration of the gentleman who was quoted in The Spiritual Experience, William James, in that book called The Varieties of Religious Experience. And I don't know if you've ever taken a look at that, but you know, I have. I didn't read the whole thing because it's written in the 1901 dialect, which is really not English as far as I'm concerned when it's a sociological tome. But in essence, you know, the theory on which this step is written is the theory of, which is the quote, the only cure for dipsomania, drinking too much, is religiosomania. That's basically what he said. And he basically presented these thoughts to a group of people in the Gifford Lectures at the University of Edinburgh. And they are published, they are available. But it really talked about, as this chapter does, the fact that we've gotten out of balance, that over time, either we've become totally, early culture was totally dependent on the mystical, the relational, the spirit, you know, the spiritual, if you will, whereas the modern concept became more a matter of the scientific. And what's interesting, and I think this is probably not surprising, is that we have a hard time combining the two. And that's what I was struggling with in my 20s. How do I be both emotionally and religiously and spiritually present, but also be a scientist? Because I was a biology major. So not only was it 1970, but I was a biology major. So I was really, science was safe for me. Facts, you could prove the facts. You could do an experiment. You could have it come out. So I was relying very much on cognitive issues and on science. And this, both this chapter and where it originally come from, talks about how we've gotten out of joint. We don't have that balance between the two, and consider that both should be there. So, you know, the agnostic, the person who simply isn't willing to commit or doesn't believe that there is any way of knowing one way or the other. I can remember having an argument with somebody, even during one of my times when I was very active in a community, a religious community. Well, how can I know that this is true if I can't see it? You know, the old scientist was still nudging away at things. And this chapter talks about how it wasn't until we've been totally beaten down that we were willing to think about things differently. My coming into recovery came very quickly after I made a prayer that I didn't really intend to make, but I looked at myself in the mirror one day and I said, oh my God, help me. And I really wasn't praying, but I now know it was a prayer, because literally 48 hours later I was in my first meeting. I got the information and went. And I know that's that concept of it doesn't take much. All we have to do is look in that direction, and there it is. It doesn't make too hard a chore of it for us. Many people find they don't even know that they were agnostics coming into this program, that they were battling with that, I now see that I was using my scientific background to argue with it, because of course I had to be right. I just simply had to be. If you look at the, going through the look, the first thing they talk about is that, well, you know, this is really the only thing that works. If you follow up at the end of the last chapter, the very last paragraph of the step we read last week, except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. And that's the bridge sentence that goes into step two, part one. So that he, it starts off with that, that angle of this is the only way that you're going to be able to resolve it. But then again, and it talks about the fact that we didn't have the power. So we need the other power. We don't have the power. How are we going to get it? And then that beautiful statement, well, that's exactly what this book is about. I don't know about any of you, but the first time I went into recovery, I didn't think that's what the book was about at all. I thought the book was about, you know, doing my steps, writing my thing, not doing the substances that I was doing, and paying off my bills and feeling better. I didn't understand that spiritual underpinning. And of course, he talks, there's talk about that here, about how when the newcomer first hears this thing, oh yeah, I really want this. It's kind of like in, you know, the compulsive eating category. Oh yeah, that's the diet. That's the one that's going to work. I know that one's going to work. And then you go, oh man, but there are these other things that go with it. So I can remember having that feeling about, well, I can't go near that. I mean, I was really shut down when I first came into this, and that was after a lot of work prior to even being able to come in here. And so the discussion here talks about what are the barriers to us being able to embrace this spiritual being or the power greater than ourselves. And he really is very, very specific about it. You know, he talks about the prejudice that we've had, the obstinacy. Quite frankly, I think, you know, when I think about my life in addiction, I didn't want anybody telling me how to be. I didn't want anybody to tell me I needed to change my ways. And quite frankly, that oversensitivity that they talk about, oh yeah, that was part of my wiring as well. And the unreasoning prejudice. And then it talks about that bristling antagonism. And that's the words that I saw this week when I was doing my reading. I went, yeah, I own it now. I know that was the way I was. I was at a place where there was such anger and resentment and antagonism, I couldn't have seen it otherwise at that time until I really came into the recovery program. So once they talk about those barriers, they say, well, you know, again, it's the argument, why should we believe? And of course, they've already said it's the only road to recovery. And that's the first thing. But then they go through sort of picking away at our rational defenses. Well, we've believed in other things we can't see. Why shouldn't we believe in this? And then there's that whole issue of, you may have trouble with religious groups. And, you know, I did too. And it was like, well, look at all the bad things they did. But this concept of, yeah, but look at all the good things they've done. So that, you know, where you come from your perspective, it talks about having the barrier of wanting to, you know, to say no to something for a categorical reason that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what's really going on with the group. And that quote of, we never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing. For me, it took a long time in a lot of different ways of looking at this to be able to see that it could be looked at in a different kind of way. And other barriers to faith and belief that they talk about, that the belief is, the concept of any kind of belief that is accomplished is miraculous, and it will be miraculous and accomplish the humanly impossible. In other words, it works. So then it goes into the category of the logic of, well, we've seen it help other people. So again, you know, this is going point by point. Well, you know, you don't have to believe this, you don't have to believe that, but, you know, if you don't do this, what are you missing here? It was, and in some ways, if I'd been able to read this chapter as it was written, when I first read it, I would have had a very different experience of it, because I would have seen that it was talking to me. It was talking to the person to me who was having trouble with basically letting go. And that's what faith can be about. Faith can be about saying, I can't see it, I can't touch it. It may not respond to the things the way I've been taught, but in terms of showing itself, but belief is something that is beyond proof. And then that wonderful statement on 53, God either is or he isn't. And, you know, that to me is the point of, you know, it's a turning point. And it talks about the one of those turning points. And then it talks about, well, certainly we've had faith in other things. You know, we've believed in other things that we couldn't see. And then it talks about, of course, our worship. I mean, how many of us worship whatever substance we used? And in reality, we did. You know, we had substances or whatever our behaviors were on a pedestal to keep us going. I need that power. I used to think of those things as that's what's going to get me through. So we had been worshiping other things. We had, you know, we'd had faith in other things. And then that that final sentence in the categorization of, well, reason wasn't everything. And I was not ready for that when I first came into recovery. I now can see that it is this mix of things. And that then it moves into sort of the ending of that discussion, talking about deep down in every man, woman, child, I would say tree, whatever, animals, is the fundamental idea of God. And again, they talk about, well, we're going to be talking about God, but I don't think I will. Again, I didn't see that the first few times that I read through it. And they talk about the fact that they were finally willing to see that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup. And I think that's something that it's a fairly sophisticated concept that doesn't necessarily, it's not what gets taught in Sunday school necessarily. That concept that we are of, and yet the words that are used are different. So maybe all these different messages help some of us to hear it differently. And then comes the final invitation in that chapter, which is, well, you know, if our testimony helps you to see this a little differently, if maybe this sounds a little okay, then why don't you join us? Join us on this road. And I think that concept that it's a never-ending road. It's one that lasts for as long as we are present here, is certainly one that helped me, because again, now we get into that discussion of the burning bush versus the educational variety, which is what the spiritual experience is about. And you know, how many people would love to have that sudden change? I was thinking about this week and I said, you know, I'm not sure I'd want that sudden change. I think I'd be scared. You know, so all of a sudden some bush started burning in my backyard and talking to me. I might wonder whether my mind was going to places it wasn't meant to go. Facebook has that little thing at the top. It says, what are you thinking about? Or what's in your mind? And I told a friend, I said, you know, I always answer it, not much, but I don't say it out loud. So, you know, it's just a matter of, I think it would be really cool, because the part of me that wants to be the center of attention, yeah, I'm an addict, what can I say? The parts of me that wants to be the star, that wants to be, wants the special thing, but when I think about it, although I have had experiences that I have received direct communication, I know I don't think I want the burning bush, and I don't think I want somebody sending me to Nineveh or anything like that. You know, those stories are scary. And they sound to me like back alleys in Philadelphia a little bit with more substances involved. So, you know, I'm being very honest. I'm being honest. It just feels that way. But I know that my experience has been the educational variety. I know that I've grown over time. One of the meditation books that I read, or meditations that I read, talks about religious maturity. And one of the things that you start off with is a good set of rules. And I think I had the good set of rules. You know, at least it wasn't too punitive and nothing really bad happened to me in church. But then as we mature in that, it begins to change and you begin to see different aspects of it and you begin to hold both concepts and you begin to not rely on, is this a fact and is this literal? But is this something that can help us to know how it fits together? And I really think my goal in spirituality is being able to not challenge everything anymore and let it be the way it is and just listen and be open. That phrase, honest, open, and willing. I got that phrase early in recovery. I didn't understand how deep it was. So thanks for letting me talk today.
Oh, thank you.